This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of Safety FM. This is Jay Allen, or should I say Safety FM with Jay Allen? Well, however you want to take a look at it, you know what I'm saying. So anyways, we're hanging out here today on Tuesday, December the 10th, doing the things that we get to do. Now, last week, we hung out for a little bit and we had a presentation by Stephen Frost as he was talking about safety leadership. And this week is the follow-up. So what does that mean? So last week we did his presentation that was actually part of the ACFS Safety Day back on October the 15th of 2024. What we are going to do today is we are going to do the interview that we did after he came off the stage. So if you're ready to take a listen to what exactly was going on, let's go ahead and do that. Take a listen, sit back and relax. Take a listen to what Stephen Frost has to share with you about safety leadership and some of the other information that he wants you to know about here on Safety FM with Jay Allen. Let's do that right now. Ford Barton, we're just going to talk and we'll go from there. So we need to probably start off with some of the people that, of course, weren't here, so they don't know what your speech was about. So I know that you just came off the stage and you're talking about the foundation and safety leadership. So what can you give background people to the people that are taking a listen at home?
Well, the Foundation of Safety Leadership Program was developed by the CWPR to introduce the first time behavioral-based safety concepts to the people that just follow OSHA. And this program is part of our 30-hour class. It's normally a 2.5-hour program. It generally talks about the five key elements of being a safety leader.
And so tell them a little bit about, so you're telling them about what was going on and then how they can become a safety leader. Let's go into a little bit of your background, because I didn't even go into, you know, your name or anything like the important stuff of exactly where you're based out of. So you're at the are you at the Tampa location in USF?
I am at the Wesley Chapel.
Oh, Wesley Chapel
of USF, and we're the OSHA Training Institute Education Center. I've been there since 2013. I've been a subject matter on a wide breadth of things because of my background.
So let's talk about that, because there's a lot of people that when they start trying to get into the industry, they don't know where to start. What would you recommend starting off? Like, what would be the jumping off point of, hey, I think I'm interested in safety. This is something that I want to do. Tell them a little bit more on how they would get this whole thing started.
Generally, anybody that wants to get into safety, I always tell them, take our standards course in whatever, either construction, maritime, or general industry, so that they can get a basis of the rule book that they need to follow. Then they need to specialize in whatever company they're able to get into and find those courses like fire protection, fall protection, trenching, excavation, those type courses that are going to give them specific knowledge for the type of work that the company is doing. And then that will help improve them. When I got into safety, I knew nothing about it. I came from the nursing field. They hired me because I was in nursing, and it was a medical facility where we did allograft tissue. And so I didn't know what I was getting into, and they didn't know what they were hiring.
Okay, so listen, I have to ask the question, of course. So how did you all of a sudden get into it? So they saw that you were in nursing, so why did you agree to do this? Normally, most of the people tell me that this is a punishment thing, where you're trying to punish yourself at the time.
No punishment. I had just graduated with a bachelor's in something totally off the wall. It was a training and education program, and I needed a new career field. My wife and I had both been in nursing for a while, and HMOs took over. We decided this was not the thing that we wanted to do anymore, and I was looking for something different. My internship and my final semester was with the Alachua County Health Department, so I had to go out and do testing in the environment for water and soil and all these type things. I had to work in the clinics with different diseases and doing education on for patients and diabetes, STDs, all sorts of things. Then my semester ended. I had to go get a job. My wife liked that. So it was like, okay, what do I do? I'm looking in the paper and I'm going through looking for a job. And this job came up, environmental health and safety. I'm like, environmental, I can do that. So I applied for the job. I went through the interview, interviewed really well. And I kept talking about environmental while we were doing the interview because that was my focus. And at the end of the interview, they said, you know, the E that we're talking about is employee. So it was employee health and safety, mm-hmm. not environmental. And I'm like, oh, well, I was a fireman for a little while and former medical. I practiced a lot of safety, and they're like, oh, perfect. So they hired me because I wasn't going to be grossed out over the things they were doing.
Especially because of the things that you've seen.
And we had to, you know, there were people that went out in the field and would collect body parts and bring them back and weed machine on them and create new things like screws and disc and things that would help other people. Allograft tissue is a great product, but an average person would not have found that to be an okay thing.
Absolutely. I definitely understand that.
So I had to learn real quick. I'm like going, okay, what do I do? And I went out and bought a book. So now you're the safety director.
Okay.
And I opened up the book and started reading it. And one of the things it said was go get training. So I went to the National Safety Council in Gainesville at the time and took every course I could. They gave me a lot of leeway. They didn't know what I was supposed to be doing. So they're like, sure, yeah, go get it. So I ended up with a huge certificate because I took like 20 courses in the first 6 months. And every time I took a course, I'd come back and go, okay, we need to do this. And I'd focus on that till the next course. And then I'd start something else and keep going with the first one. And now add the second one and layered it and created the programs that we needed. And still today, they're using a lot of my programs. It's funny. 6 months ago, I had a chance to talk to them. They actually called me and said, hey, we're looking for a safety director. We'll want to come in and have a chat. And I'm like, I'm always open to chatting with you. And I went in and talked to them, and they showed me what they were doing, how they were doing it, what had changed over the years. It had grown huge, and then it came back down because they automated a lot of process, sent some things out to other countries. But they were still following a lot of my same basic programs that I started more than 30 years ago. So it was an amazing opportunity to see your work still in progress.
So you definitely built something that was sustainable. So that's super important. And to see something 30 years later, I mean, you must have really, it sounds like you took some deep dives to get to that point for sure.
I did. It was a rough transition, but once I got into it and then my wife moved to Colorado and I went with her and took a real safety job there. And now I knew what I needed to know, because when you're starting in safety, that's the biggest problem, is you don't know what you don't know. You think, oh, I just need to have a first aid program, or, oh, I just need this. But you don't know until you go take these type courses where, like, we offer our standards course that goes over the entire set of standards that you're going to have to follow in any business. Safety is safety is safety in any place that you go. So there are rules, and there are ways to make those rules work. OSHA is the very basic, and we try to teach in our classes that you take these basics and grow upon them based on your business model and what your leadership is really allowing. Having a safety climate where everybody is a safety leader, that's what we just talked about in there, is making sure that the rules are there, people are following them, and that everybody is in charge of it. It's not one person's job. When people first start in safety, they think, oh my gosh, I'm going to be in charge of all these people's safety. That's not the case. You're in charge of getting the rules in place and teaching the supervisors to enforce it.
So let me ask a question right there, because you've almost seen both sides of the spectrum here. You said when you started, you decided to take as many courses as possible in regards of learning about safety. At the very beginning when we started speaking, you referenced that if somebody's going into safety to go, we'll just use the term niche specific, not exactly what you said, but as because you've been able to see both, which one do you think works best? Do you think niche specific is the way to go, or do you think that they should have a broad spectrum walking in?
I think they're going to need the broad spectrum walking in. Having that standards course really works, because every business is affected by so many different factors. And if you're not aware the rules are there and know how to look them up and know what to do with them, you're going to have a problem. And, you know, the courses I took were on the different levels, the different specific things that I thought were important for that. But if I had known all the rules, I might have chosen some different ones as I was going into it.
Very, very interesting. So when someone walks in and let's say, for instance, I want to get into safety, but I am not with a company yet. And all of a sudden I say, okay, I'm at USF. Stephen, where do I start? Where do I go from here? Now, you've talked about this one basic course. Is there anything else that you would encourage them to take a look at? Because there's other universities, I'm not going to name them, that they offer, we'll say, safety programs for people to start off in safety. And I'm not dogging University of Phoenix because that has nothing to do with this, but it's almost like the University of Phoenix for safety is the way that I'll word that. And some people like that and some people don't like it. So what would you recommend for somebody starting off from scratch, doesn't have a place to go? You tell them to already told them generalize to this. What would this course look like? What would the layout of the program look like?
You know, we get this question far more than you might think. I probably speak to 3 or 4 people every week that are telling me, hey, I really want to get into safety. I want to become a safety director. What do I need to do? And I always start out the same thing. Start with a standards course and let's try to see what area you want to focus in, because, you know, it's a pretty broad spectrum. I've worked in a majority of the industries out there. I've had an opportunity throughout my many years to have some very unique. I ran cities in remote places, Antarctica, the Bahamas. I've done work in Europe, in Germany.
Hold on. You just went from 2 pretty big extremes there. You went from extreme cold to extreme heat. I mean, I hope they weren't in a row like
it
that.
It was, actually. Oh, I worked in Antarctica. I got promoted, became the safety director for the Bahamas.
Well, that's definitely a promotion, especially with the weather change.
You know, Antarctica was beautiful, but it was the wild, wild west when we first got down there. It took a lot of work for us to change the mentality of people. And I had done some work with Scott Geller at the University of Florida and had an opportunity to really learn that behavioral-based safety was the way I wanted to go. And that's, again, one of those things that you have to learn and figure out. You figure out what all the rules are, then you figure out what part of it interests you the most, and then you focus on those kind of companies that you're interested in. You know, I would have never thought, oh, I really want to go to Antarctica and hang out for months at a time. But there I was, Florida boy in Antarctica.
You definitely had a wardrobe change on the way there. And then when you left it, there was definitely a different one at the same time, too.
Yeah, without a doubt, because we'd go down during the summer. And when you get on the C-130s back then, now they use 141s, you'd have to get in your full Antarctic gear for takeoff and landing. That was a rule. You had to be in everything. And it's 80 degrees or more in Christchurch, New Zealand, where we were taking off. And you get up in the air. And until you get to, you know, 20,000 feet, you're hot, to say the least. And the pilots would always turn on the heat because they always had the females up near the front of the plane and turn that heat up a little bit so that when everybody started taking off their gear, they got to come back and say hi to people.
Very, very. I guess that's a different approach for sure. So let me ask just kind of a strange question, because you've been doing this for quite some time. You've been in the industry for a while. What changes have you seen that you did not expect when you first got into this?
I would say that the task of behavioral-based safety has really changed safety over the years. It went from the original where the safety people were like police officers. They'd come by, they'd tap you on the shoulder. People were like, man, now what? And versus now when the safety person comes up and taps you, they're like, oh, what? What was I doing? You know, and they want to learn from you. They want to take that. And then the new AI, and I've been working with a company in California that does visual AI for the last few years that is incredible. It monitors people's ergonomics. It watches the production area and watches what people do. If somebody's having to reach up too many times in a shift, it alerts the staff. It doesn't say this person's doing something wrong. It says, hey, you've got a problem. You're putting stuff in the wrong place. Or it monitors forklifts driving around. And if it comes too close to people too many times, it alerts the bosses and says, hey, you need to look at where your people are compared to your material and your forklifts. We need to separate those. So it's been a great adventure growing with that company and making sure that they are advancing. And today it's being used at about 20, 30 different organizations across the U.S. It's still a growing company. Now a lot of insurance companies have taken them on and are using it because obviously less injuries, less cost for the insurance. I've also seen AI being used as predictive. In the mining industry, there is a program that came out of Australia that literally, if you're using it at your site, it tells you when and what kind of injuries you're likely to have. Therefore, you can go in, focus on preventing it. It uses millions of pieces of data, inspections, day-to-day audits, injuries, and incidents that have happened at facilities, and takes all that in consideration and says, hey, you didn't do this. This is likely to happen. And it gets down to the movement of vehicles. And it's incredible how AI has really helped this industry. I've used AI in data management, which we had a speaker on earlier. Obviously, that is a great way because that data crunching can take forever. And the more data you have, the better it is for anticipating what it is you might do. There's an AI program out there that WorkComp uses. Again, insurance companies have paid for this because they take billions of pieces of data of all the things that have happened. And now they're able to better choose their companies and say, yeah, you're at risk. Let's get a safety person in there, help you fix this problem.
It's amazing just to hear on how this technology has changed throughout the years, especially from your vantage point and what you've seen. So if people want to find out more about you and the programs that you're offering with the USF, where can they go to find out more information?
They can go to our website, and that is USFOTIEC.org. Or they're welcome to reach out to me. Mm-hmm. And my email is sjfrost@usf.edu.
Well, Stephen, I really do appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.